The information in the Quality of Life radio program is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as medical or legal advice on any subject matter. Quality of Life and Ronald Zach Law provides medical and legal advice and other services only to persons or entities with which it has established a formal healthcare provider or attorney-client relationship. The program is paid for by Quality of Life Medical Research Center.
Good afternoon and welcome to Quality of Life Radio Show. And this is Ronald Zach, one of the co-hosts of the show. And the other co-host, Dr. Jack McGettigan, he's out at the Reno Air Show. We may hear from him. We're trying to put together some interviews from there. We've had some technical difficulties, so that may not quite happen. He and Robert Newton, the guest, the F-16 pilot from last week, were both out at the Reno Air Show. This is a radio show that deals with both medical and legal issues and anything about airplanes, aircraft. We have a few pilots here. I have a law office, Ronald Zach Law, and I also work with Dr. McGettigan at Quality of Life Medical and Research Center, the sponsor of the program. My associate attorney, Veronica Sternitsky, is often here with us, but she's not here today. She's out observing the Jewish holiday. We begin our show with some medical and legal news you can't use. Medical and legal news you can't use. Just a few stories that I observe and I watch and I follow these. Here's an interesting one. Speaking of airplanes and air travel and air shows, air races, at Miami International Airport, surveillance video caught TSA agents stealing from passengers as they went through security. Who knew? Of course, everybody. And that's something that probably happens with all too much regularity. And there's some great photographs from the video of two TSA workers who were reaching into the bins, taking out wallets, taking money out of them, unzipping the purses, putting stuff in their pockets. And it looks like none of them are really going to be punished in any serious way. Another, since we're on the subject of airplanes, the headline here is passenger on ill-fated diarrhea plane says flight attendants were forced to craft makeshift biohazard suits. So this was a Delta flight. It left Atlanta. It was headed toward Barcelona and had to turn around and go back to Atlanta because a passenger had diarrhea all the way down the aisle on the way to the bathroom, rushing, I'm sure, to the bathroom. And they had such extensive damage, they ended up having to take the plane back to Atlanta, tear out the carpet. They couldn't find another plane for these people. They tore out all the carpet and replaced it and then sent everybody on their way. There were some interesting clips from the radio transmissions between the pilot and the tower, and the pilot was saying, we've had a passenger who's had diarrhea all the way through the airplane, so we want to come back to Atlanta. And there were lots of apologies to the passengers, and they had to wait several hours, but they did get back on the plane and go to Barcelona.
Kind of makes you question the fellow's diet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And he hadn't even eaten the airplane food. Well, there probably is no airplane food. Well, probably yeah, going not. To Barcelona, yeah. There'd be a meal.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's interesting air travel stories. I don't know why this article attracted me, but I was just so pleased to see that the Ken is one of the 12 finalists being considered for induction to the Toy Hall of Fame. There's a National Toy Hall of Fame. And Barbie has been in that Hall of Fame since it opened in 1998. and Ken has just been on the sidelines. But now, because of all the attention, I guess, from the Barbie movie, which I haven't seen. Have you seen it, Charles?
No.
No? Okay,
well, chances of my seeing it, 0.0.
Okay, well, let me know how it is after you see it.
I'll tell you how all three Fifty Shades of Grey were.
How many times did you see that?
Once. One each, recently.
Oh.
And I found it interesting, and not because of the sex.
No. Toxic additives found in Skittles and Pez could be banned in California. So Gavin Newsom has a bill on his desk to ban Skittles and Pez. Can you imagine? Now, I believe that these products, or at least these products with the chemicals that they're sold with in this country, are not available anywhere else in the world, but here in America, you can buy these, and I'm sure we'll continue to have them available in Arizona with toxic chemicals. There are at least 4 toxic chemicals in both Pez and Skittles that are linked to cancer, nervous system damage, and hyperactivity. Imagine that.
New improved fentanyl Skittles.
Really? I think the worst offender is probably this red dye number 3. Red dye number 3 is pretty toxic, and it's in a lot of candies, but it does cause cancer in laboratory animals and in very high doses, of course. And it's been linked to behavioral issues in children, but we haven't noticed any unusual changes in children's behavior in the last 15 years, have we?
No, but it has also caused choking in rats when they force the Skittles down their throat.
But they love them. Mm. They do. They have good taste.
We have a recording of that, by the way.
Do we? There wasn't a recording. Brominated vegetable oil harms the body's nervous system after long-term exposure. And some people eat a lot of Skittles.
Brominated? What does that mean? Does that relate from a lot of bromances or what?
It could if you're of that inclination. Also, this is interesting. It's also related to chronic headaches, memory loss, and impaired balance. I almost forgot that one.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
pull the microphone in front of you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Charles was making hand gestures because I think I migrated away from the microphone. I apologize for that.
You became a migratory species.
That's right. And propylparaben, that's another chemical. It's used as a preservative in baking goods linked to fertility issues. It disrupts estrogen in females and reduces sperm counts in males. And we're going to be talking on this show and future shows a lot about hormones, what's happening to our hormones, and that's probably one of the many, many offenders to our hormones. This is an interesting legal story. So there is this guy. It's in Louisiana. So person inherits a house. They inherit the house and they find out somebody's living there who's not related. There's a squatter. And this guy, Joseph Guerin is his name, he's described as a serial squatter. And so these people inherit the house when I think a parent died, and they find this squatter there. They go through the work to evict him and actually get him arrested. He's in jail for a while, and when he gets out of jail, he goes back to the house. He gave that address as his address. When he left jail, he went to that house, and he's trying to sell the property, and he's been able to tie up the property in sale. He changed the locks. This is a squatter, and he's got the property on the market for $225,000. He says it's a magnificent home with plenty of space for a large family. It's got a pool, and the owner of the home, the new owners who inherited the home, can't even get the listing taken down. So things like that really do happen and become serious legal issues. Back to medical news, sort of. There's a big rise, or there has been a big rise in Botox for going back to school. It's a going back to school surge, and there's quotes from the mothers, like, I want my daughters to be proud of me. I want them to be happy that my mom, she looks so pretty. And so women who have to take their kids to school want Botox. I guess some men do too. A lot of men get Botox. People spend $2 billion a year on Botox, and there's as many as 7 billion Botox procedures annually. I wonder why we're not doing that at the clinic right now. That's
Botox?
Like a moneymaker. Yeah.
I don't know. It's purely cosmetic.
Well, yeah, the way it's being used here, it is. But you might want to consider them for those crow's feet you got there, Charles.
Well, I like my crows. You know, my yeah. crows would get lonely. You know, they'd be less lonely if we went ahead and took a break, though.
Okay. Well, we'll take a break. I'm asking people, because we kind of had this little technical problem with the interviews we expected from the Reno Air Show Air Race today. Please call with your legal questions, call with medical questions, call with your questions about romance, women, love, whatever, and I'll provide answers, I promise. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio Show, sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Clinic. And I'm Ronald Zack. I'm one of the co-hosts. I'm an attorney and I'm a nurse practitioner at that clinic. My law firm is Ronald Zack Law, and we do primarily trusts and estates and a lot of probate litigation. We've been doing tons of litigation lately. I invite you to call if you have a question. I invite Charles to show me the clock so that I could watch my time. I can't see the clock on here. So he can't do it. So I wanted to talk about a couple of cases that came into the law firm this week. And one, well, not necessarily cases. I don't talk about cases that came in. Some inquiries that I had. And I had one inquiry from an attorney. This is an attorney who I've known, and I often get questions from other attorneys. I've been doing this a long time. I'm a certified specialist in this field. But this attorney was telling me, he said, well, I've got a client who only wants a beneficiary deed. They don't want to do an estate plan, but they don't want to leave anything to their children. They want to make sure that their children are disinherited. So how can he do that? So a beneficiary deed is a way to transfer property. It's outside of probate. You don't have to worry about probate. It transfers automatically by operation of law once the beneficiary who's listed on the deed records a death certificate. That recordation of the death certificate will vest title in the new owner, the beneficiary. And what a beneficiary deed says is, upon my death, this property belongs to so-and-so. So this person is worried, and rightfully so, to be worried that he needs to do something to affirmatively disinherit his natural heirs. And that's something that people should be concerned about, that if you have somebody who you don't want to leave money to and they're a natural heir of yours, meaning that they would inherit had you no plan at all, they may have some rights, and there could even be an argument made that you just inadvertently overlooked them and didn't remember to include them in your plan. And I've seen people make assertions like that in court and try to excuse me, and tried to get assets that they weren't necessarily entitled to. So my answer was that you cannot. There really isn't a way that you can disinherit in a deed. And when somebody tells me, oh, the only property I have is this house, I don't have anything else, that's not really true ever. There's often something else. And we frequently find property that somebody had in their estate and didn't know it, or property will come into the estate after their death. And it could be, sometimes it's something like a class action settlement, which could be significant and could be payable, or maybe had been payable and they weren't able to locate the person, and it's in unclaimed funds with a state somewhere. We've found tens of thousands of dollars in unclaimed funds that people did know about and couldn't prepare for. So that's to get that money to where it's supposed to go after the person dies, you need to have a personal representative or executor who's assigned, appointed by a court to do that. And very often you need a personal representative to even get information. If, for example, you suspect that your loved one died of medical malpractice, well, it might be extremely difficult to obtain any information, any medical information, without proper authority, and that authority would probably come in the form of letters of personal representative, or letters testamentary, but having a personal representative or executor appointed. We've even had to question.
Yeah, finish your thought. We've even had to.
We've even had a case where a writer died, and he had all of his writing, his work product, on a Google Drive that was inaccessible, and Google's not going to let anybody get into that without a court order. So that was a case where we had to have a personal representative appointed to get a court order ordering Google to release his information to his family.
Was that difficult to obtain?
It wasn't difficult to obtain. And actually, Google was extremely cooperative. They wanted to give the information. They're afraid. You know,
they're worried about liability.
Yeah. Yep, they're worried about liability and especially, you know, potentially even criminal liability for you know, breaching their requirements.
What happens if a person has a will and the executor that they've named isn't available and there's no successor executor? What happens then?
Very good question. If somebody has named an executor, and we see this too in powers of attorney, when you've named an agent or attorney in fact under your power of attorney, it's always wise to have a backup plan. But in the case of a will, it's probably going to take a formal probate, which just means that you have to have a court hearing, and we may talk a little more about that. And the court will have to appoint a personal representative from among who wants to be. So it may be another, it could be a beneficiary in the will. It could be an heir. Hopefully an heir. There is a hierarchy, a priority of who can become personal representative. So somebody would have to step in to substitute for that and ask the court to appoint them and meet the requirements. But something that we see quite often.
Does the power of attorney survive a person's life?
The quick answer is no.
Right.
Yeah, power of attorney, generally we say that it dies with the person. Excuse me, my voice is going, but there are especially in Arizona, there's notable exception. That exception is in the healthcare power of attorney. All right. In the healthcare power of attorney, you can name a person to do certain things after your death. You can give your agent under your healthcare power of attorney the authority to donate your body, donate your body parts. You can give them the authority to make all of your final arrangements. So there is provisions for after death, but generally and under common law, no, power of attorney does not, and it's actually you can get in trouble using power of attorney after someone has died, and I've seen it done. We've had that case.
Yeah, don't use somebody's handicap permit after they're dead for parking.
Oh, really? What was the fine you got for doing that?
I didn't. I never did it. When my dad passed away, I saved it in the drawer that I kept all his stuff in because I wasn't going to do that.
Oh. Can I have it?
It's from California, and it's 15 years out of date. But oh. I'm sure that a certain amount of legal legerdemain could make that undo that, I'm sure. So, you know, it's coming from Margaret Bletchley Mumbles, the Duchess of Legerdemain.
Jeez. Thank you, Charles. The beneficiary and disinheritance question, you know, had come up, and all the reasons why you do need a will. And even when you have a trust, you need a will. And
why?
Well, for all of the property that's not titled into the trust, your trustee only has authority over property that's titled in the name of the trust or properly assigned to the trust, and sometimes not even then. And so if you have something like an account that's not in the trust, or we very often see, like, somebody will have their house, they'll put their house in the trust. That's almost always done when you do your trust. House gets in the trust, but the house is often taken out of the trust briefly if you're refinancing, for example. And then you need to put it back in. A lot of people don't. And so when you have those assets and you die and you got the trust and you have those assets that are not titled in the name of the trust, they have to get into the trust. And the only way to get into the trust is through probate. And there's you have to have a personal representative appointed. And so whenever we do a trust, or you should absolutely have what's called a pour over will, because it pours everything over into your trust. You should not make distributions out of the will to anyone other than your trust. I've seen that done, and I've actually seen in one case we had to give double distributions to somebody because the distribution was made in the will and in the trust. And we're hoping for your phone calls at 520-790-2040. If you have any questions about medicine, law, we'll do our best to answer those if we know the answer. And if we don't know the answer, we'll answer them anyway. We'll be right back with your phone calls. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio, sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center. I'm the co-host, Ronald Zach. Co-host Jack McGettigan is in Reno enjoying the air show, air race, along with Bob Robert Newton, the guest from last week. And we, I was looking at some of the questions that I had gotten in the office this past week, and one that was kind of interesting to me was about DNRs. So we often do healthcare powers of attorney. It's part of a package. When you do a will or a trust, you need healthcare directives. healthcare directives or advanced directives are generally at least two documents, a healthcare power of attorney that names a person to make decisions if you're not able to, or if you can't make or communicate those decisions, and a living will, which is a document that generally is going to say something like, if I'm not terminally ill and if I'm my death is imminent, or the doctors think my death is imminent and life-sustaining treatment will only prolong the moment of my death, do I want life-sustaining treatment and what that life-sustaining treatment is? Now, people ask me about DNR. A lot of people want to be a DNR. Now DNR means do not resuscitate. It's actually an order in the hospital that you would have. If you want a DNR, and if it's appropriate, and it often isn't, there is a form called a pre-hospital medical directive. That's an Arizona form. It's orange. So you may hear of it as the orange form. And that has to be signed by a healthcare professional as well as the principal, the person who wants it. That the purpose of that, though, is to give permission to first responders not to resuscitate you. They have a legal duty to resuscitate you if it's indicated, unless you have the proper documentation in the form of an orange form. The orange form is effective in the field and in the emergency room. It doesn't extend into the hospital. There's another form that you can get now called POLST, P-O-L-S-T, Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. It's a very specific form that the doctor, it's an actual doctor's order. Now, we have it available in Arizona, but we don't have any legislation making it available or requiring anybody to follow it. So I kind of think that it's a little bit... questionable whether it would be effective without some legislation, because it may be signed by a doctor, but that doctor likely is not going to have any privileges at the hospital you're taken to, and so they wouldn't follow it. In the field, I don't think first responders should follow that, because the law doesn't say they can. We have a caller on the line. Pat, thank you for calling.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for the great new show. I love it. The music is great. I heard Quincy. Very nice choice.
Thank you.
The theme, yes. It's especially nice because my father-in-law was the medical examiner of Pima County for about 30 years.
Wow.
And that was one of his favorite shows.
Yes. Wow.
Naturally, But anyway, I'm calling with some good news. It may not sound like it because there's a scary word involved with it, but we're talking about preventing suicide all month long. September is National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. We call ourselves NAMI. It's September is Suicide Prevention Month every year. So the good news is we're still in the middle of the month. Let's talk it up, because how is the doctor going to fix it if we don't tell them where it hurts? And first we have to practice saying those hard words. And we can do it just like the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice, practice, practice. So that's all I had to say, and I'm really glad that I kind of got a double whammy speaking to both of you great broadcasters today.
Well,
have a great day.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat, and thank you for bringing that to our attention. I appreciate the call a lot. And that's true, a very, very serious issue, and an issue that that we can all participate in addressing. I worked for several years at the Veterans Administration Hospital, and there's a you know, I don't remember the numbers, the statistics, but there's a very high percentage of veterans who commit suicide. A tough job, and it's a tough job coming home from too. We have a caller on the line, Rick. Thank you for calling Quality of Life Radio Show.
Hi, thank you. I was a big fan of your old show. I believe it was called Law and Order or something like that.
Law Review Radio. Yes.
Oh, yeah, and you had the special victims section or something. Yeah, it was a great show. I used to enjoy it in the olden days.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
So I just heard the beginning of your show, and you were talking about that. I just missed it, the very first part, and I've had a question about home title theft. So I'm on the computer right now. I've actually found Ron Zach's title, and I just have signed my name to it. So I guess, according to the commercials I hear from Sean Hannity and all these other guys, I own your house now. Would you like to buy it back from me?
Well, that's, yeah, we hear a lot of commercials about home title theft, and I've seen it. I've seen people transfer titles. We've had a couple of cases. I actually, most recently, I saw one. I was working in a pro bono legal clinic for Step Up to Justice, is the organization, and someone came in who had experienced that. Now, this was a person who was away for a number of years, and someone had just used a fake power of attorney to transfer. Ooh. But you need a notary when you sign a deed. What were you going to say?
I didn't want to interrupt you. I guess my question is, yeah. So I don't mean to interrupt you, but my point of view is, if you can't show that you transferred funds into my account, and same thing a notary, if you can't show this stuff, they make it sound like, they say this in the commercial, the thieves got online in 5 minutes and they forged the name and now it's their house. And I think to myself, if they forge the name, that sounds like fraud. And if it's fraud, how can it be their house? I guess that's, I don't like the commercials because they're sort of instilling fear in people that don't logically think, well, how can you prove that you put money into escrow for me? I just don't like the way they make it sound like 5 minutes later it's not your house anymore.
Right, and I agree. Fear is used to try and sell a lot of things, including trusts, and I'll talk about that quite a bit, where people are instilled with the fear of probate and expenses and the government getting your property and all kinds of stuff if you don't have a trust, which is none of it's true. And it's the same thing in this case. You're absolutely right that it may not be so much a question of escrow, and paying for it, because a lot of transfers are made without any transfer of money, and inter-family transfers. People have transferred property, and usually the deed is going to say something like for $10 and other valuable consideration, something like that. But there's so many ways to challenge that illegal action of taking somebody's property that doesn't belong to you, and it's they do in the commercials make it sound so easy and straightforward. It's not the case. I mean, it may be easy to forge a document, but then there's going to be a notary who's going to be sticking their neck out for that, and there's going to be other activities, criminal activities that person's going to have to answer for. So, but it could make things very difficult for the person who really does own the house, because you're going to be put in the position of having to challenge the title or clear up this cloud on the title.
Would it be easier if the house didn't have a loan on it to commit fraud?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's just the title that's changing, and probably if you don't know that somebody has taken ownership on paper of your house, you're going to keep paying your mortgage. But there will be that lien. The lien is going to go with the house no matter who owns it.
Why is there, if there is title fraud, Why is the fraud not considered against the lending institution as opposed to the individual who owns the house?
Well, the lending institution doesn't really lose anything. They can always take the house.
Yeah, my point is that let's say someone commits title fraud, and you've got a loan, or it's not even title fraud. Let's say someone, somebody says that the mortgage has been sold, and they say you should send your mortgage payments here, and they do. Why wouldn't the fraud be against the person who? Why wouldn't it be against the fraud be against the person who committed the fraud, as opposed to the bank wanting to take your property?
Well, I think we're talking about
two different things.
Transferring
yeah.
the deed, and when a deed transfers, in most cases, if the bank finds out about it that has a mortgage on the house, they can call the note due right away. There's usually a due on sale clause
right.
in your mortgage.
But let's say you didn't transfer and it was fraud. Shouldn't the due on sale clause be against the person who committed the fraud rather than the homeowner who got defrauded? In other words, why can't the fraud be considered to be against the bank as opposed to instead of being against the homeowner?
Well, it's the homeowner who's going to lose. I mean, if they enforce a due on sale clause against the new owner, the one who committed fraud, then they're going to have to pay the note, and then they'll own the house.
Okay. Thank you. Rick?
So I guess along those lines, my question and what it just doesn't seem like it would be possible. If someone forges the title to my house, they take out a loan, wouldn't the fact that it's a forgery and it's fraud negate the loan? In other words, the commercial says, the thieves took out a loan on the house, and now I have to pay it back. I didn't take out the loan. I would think.
Okay, Rick, let him answer because we're down to a minute.
Yeah, the argument of the financial institution is that their promissory note, their loan, is secured by the property, and so it's not like they're going to go after the real owner. They'll just take the property.
So you can lose the property.
Well, I think you would be able to challenge that way before you got there. You know, there'd be okay. So many steps before that.
Bye. Thank you very much. A great show, and I wish lots of success. I'll be listening every weekend.
Oh, thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate it. Call every weekend, too. You have a great day. And it's time for another break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Law Review Radio Show, sponsored by, I'm sorry, it's Quality of Life Radio Show. I had Law Review on my mind after talking to Rick. It was 7 years or something like that we were on the air, and I get flashbacks, although the studio... They've destroyed the studio that I used to be in. And we're in another one now that's not as nice. So we're sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center. Quality of Life is a clinic. It's down by near TMC. It's on Erickson, that medical complex across from TMC. And Quality of Life does a variety of different services, and primary care is one of them, and there's pain management that's provided there, and there's a lot of hormone replacement therapy is one of our specialties, and we do, you know, hormones by many different modalities, and we do it, in my opinion, hormone therapy at Quality of Life is done the right way. Many, many people receive testosterone, for example, from online companies. They're given medications that they don't need to go along with it. They're not tested routinely. There aren't any guidelines or standards followed. And we follow very strict standards. We provide... I think an excellent service in terms of safety and efficacy for people who
who can benefit from hormone replacement. And unfortunately, that's more and more people. We've seen decline in hormones over years. Now, you do have a natural decline over time. You lose a certain amount of testosterone, both men and women. And women do need testosterone. Estrogen, of course, declines in women toward the at menopause. And there are symptoms to hormones declining. But testosterone is very interesting because over years, testosterone in men is much lower than it had been, say, 20 years ago. And one of the reasons is the chemicals, the diet. We're constantly having our hormones assaulted by chemicals. Like in that news story, there was one of the chemicals that's in Skittles and Pez that interrupt estrogen. There's a lot of chemicals that affect testosterone, and particularly offensive are these plastic bottles we drink out of all the time, and probably need some alternative to that. I was recently in Europe and noticed that you don't see these plastic bottles very often there. They even have the stainless steel bottles that they sell water in the gas stations, and things are a little different. We're being damaged badly. Many of you know me as an attorney. Some of you know me as a nurse practitioner, and I do work in primary care and hormone replacement therapy at Quality of Life Medical and Research Center. Dr. Jack McGettigan, the co-host of the show, is the founder and CEO of Quality of Life Medical Center. Our show next week is we're going to have a guest, I hope. His name is Jesse Morlock, and Jesse owns a company called Advanced IV Health, and they do incredible work. They offer many, many different IV preparations that are real lifesavers for people, and he's going to talk about some of the things that they're doing and how they're helping people and what they're accomplishing. I wanted to mention, we were talking earlier about some of the powers of attorney, healthcare directives, DNR orders, pulsed physicians' orders for life-sustaining treatment. In some states, it's called most medical orders for life-sustaining treatment. There's a few names for that. And here we have the orange form, which is the pre-hospital medical care directive that relieves first responders from the legal obligation to resuscitate people, generally for people who are terminally ill. Because there are many things you can be resuscitated successfully from. I know resuscitation, CPR, gets a bad rap because it can do damage, and it's often done in futile circumstances. But there are times when I've seen it extremely effective and easy in cases of drowning, electrocution, overdose. So there are times when you might want it. But there's another document too that I'm often asked about, and that's a mental health care power of attorney. And what in Arizona, your health care power of attorney document is going to give the agent under that power of attorney the authority to do just about anything regarding your care. Treatment, they can consent to pain medication, they can consent to psychotropic medications, they can consent to any kind of mental health treatment or therapy, with one exception. The power of attorney does not give that agent the authority to sign you into a locked psychiatric facility. There are some people who do ask for that. I don't often do them. I know some attorneys do them on everybody. You can have your mental health care powers written into your regular power of attorney as well. They need some extra initials added to them. But the I think the use of it is with somebody who's maybe been court ordered for treatment in a locked psychiatric facility in the past, then they may want their agent to have that power. So I usually don't encourage people to do it. If somebody wants them, we do them. And we've done quite a few, and we've used them. It's still hard to implement, and they're not going to admit that person unless they really need it. But remember, too, the healthcare power of attorney can be very, very easily revoked. It can be revoked in many ways. Orally, you can just say, I don't want this person my agent anymore. It can be in writing, tear it up, and it's revoked. And there really isn't any requirement to have any kind of capacity to revoke it. And I have actually taken people, walked them off memory care units to, in one case, off a memory care unit to the administrator's office in a assisted living facility, and had that person revoke their power of attorney, and we appointed somebody else. So you don't need that power. Now, the thing with the mental health powers, in that case, you need to have capacity to be able to revoke. You have to have and be able to understand what you're doing, and there has to be a confirmation from an appropriate medical provider for that. So it's a little bit different. Next week, again, we're going to have Jesse Morlock, Advanced IV Therapy, here. Dr. Jack McGettigan will be back from the Reno Air Show. Hopefully, we'll have an interview that he's recorded there, and we'll have some clips of airplane noises. For those of you who like to hear those, I usually put in my... There you go. That's why I wear earplugs when I'm on the airplane, and just try to manage. I looking forward to having some phone calls next week. Our number is 520-790-2040. And until next week, we'll be at the clinic. I'll be there in every morning, and in the law office every afternoon. Thank you very much for listening. Take care.